My next guest is living proof, if anyone needed that, everything tastes better on a bicycle. If you're a reader of The Guardian, its food pages, you will, I'm sure, have had cause to follow a recipe too of Felicity Cloke's. Now, how to cook the perfect, well, almost anything, that's her space. She's also a writer of books, and her latest is One More Croissant for the Road, and it tells the tale of a woman, her bicycle, and a tour de France of food. She joins us via Skype from the UK. Felicity, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This was a journey in which you recovered something of a lost fondness for French food.
Every single summer, and we go camping, it inevitably rain. It was always my job to go into the boulangerie and order the morning croissants and the pain au chocolat, which I hated because I was super shy. But it sort of becomes part of your DNA when you go somewhere every single year. And I just realised that I hadn't really explored it as an adult. And I sort of felt this pull back there to see actually what it was like to experience it. I was going to say not camping in the rain, but I did quite a lot of that on this trip.
Fair bit of camping in the rain.
A fair bit of camping in the rain, yeah.
We'll get to the details of the cycling and so on, but just in general terms, we tend to imagine French food as this sort of, you know, a single entity. And I guess the really interesting thing about your expedition was to sort of reveal its regionality, to reveal that relationship between a place, seasonality, ingredient.
So I, having not spent a great, you know, I go there fairly regularly, but not having spent a sort of sustained period of time there, my thoughts of French food are very much along the line of, you know, the restaurant classics, the more marinière and the steak and the chocolate mousse and stuff like that. There was a lot of that. Also, there were the things that were much more local and I only came across because it was that specific time of year. Like, there's an awful lot of white asparagus when I was there because it was actually around this time. So a lot of early summer stuff. There were a lot of very fiercely regional dishes that I'd never even heard of. So that was quite exciting. And yeah, I just realised there was so much more of it than I'd ever realised, either as a child or eating in French restaurants here in the UK.
Okay, so you did a bit of a reconnaissance on a trip with a friend by bicycle, and that was a bit of a revelation. Then the thought occurred to you, let's do this with food.
To be honest, so I went to, in 2017, a friend of mine was moving, she's half French, she was moving back down to live with her family in the south of France. And she said for some reason she was going to cycle there from London. I really don't know why, she didn't own a bike in London, this was just mad. And so I decided to go along for the ride because I wasn't doing any better. And I had the best time. I'd never had a holiday like it. It was just fabulous being on two wheels, seeing the country, eating, feeling like you can eat a lot, which is always important in a holiday. And I decided as we were going along, I was thinking, how can I do this again and call it work? I was like, oh, you know, can I write a book about this? So the whole thing was basically based around me doing another holiday.
You needed a bike, which you had made bespoke, which I'm impressed by.
Well, bespoke is I just had it sort of measured up because I had the feeling that I was going to be spending a lot of time on this bike. And you know how it is, it's fine if you're just riding it for short periods, but if you're getting on it for sort of 8-9 hours a day for 6 weeks, you don't want those aches and pains starting. So I just got measured up for a really lovely bike in a local bike shop and then realised, they said, oh, great, you know, it's going to take, probably be with us in about 2.5 months. I was like, uh-oh, in 2.5 months, I'm going to be halfway down France. I managed to get them to hurry it up. But I mean, he's beautiful. He's the love of my life.
Did it last the journey?
He did. He only had one puncture the entire way. And yeah, we had, I'd say that the brakes, the brakes could have been better. And that was a little bit hairy. I did an alpine stage. Coming down an Alp was absolutely terrifying. Actually worse than going up it. I thought going up it would be the bad bit. Coming down it, you know, you go up it, it takes you half an hour. You come down it in about 2 minutes flat, splattered with flies. So that was the only thing I could say, that his brakes could be sharper.
So you and your faithful friend on your journey or your food tour de France, you mapped it out like the tour itself into stages, into 21 stages?
Yeah, so the tour itself has 21 stages, but they base it around climbing Alps, for example, or, you know, finishing in a particular town that may or may not have slipped them a wad of cash. Well, I decided to map it out with 21 sort of classic dishes of France. The thing is that obviously you could do 50, 100 classic dishes of France. So I decided to sort of try and get a geographical spread, but also a spread of, you know, sweet and savoury. I would say vegetables and meat, but it's quite hard to find vegetable dishes in France. There's not such a... There's a salad in there. That's probably about it for the vegetable dishes. Oh, there's a ratatouille as well. So there are a few, but it's kind of sweet and savoury, lots of pastry, and just nice everywhere from Normandy to the Alps to Alsace to Paris.
What did you start with? What was the first dish?
So the first dish, because I came across on the ferry from the UK, landed in Normandy. And so the first dish was moules marinières, which is actually quite a nice one, nice gentle one to start with, you know, mussels and chips. Can't beat it, on a beach. And actually the sun was out for that bit, which was nice. Cycled there along the Normandy coast, and then to sit there eating local mussels cooked over a wood fire with a big dollop of creme fraiche. Oh, it's amazing. And a local cider. It was just a fabulous start.
As the title of the book might suggest, one of the special features of the journey was the croissant and consumption thereof. You developed an elaborate and rather foolproof rating system for croissants.
Yeah, I mean, I had to come out and say, as anyone who's read my column might notice, I'm a massive nerd when it comes to food. I love sort of analysing it, pulling it apart. You know, some people might say taking the joy out of it, but for me, the joy is in this. And I just love, I love plain croissant. That sort of, you know, you'd think they would be so similar, but actually there are massive differences. So when I'm in London, I like to, you know, go around sampling the best croissants and rating them. And I decided to do the same in France, because it's one of the things that, apart from a baguette, it's one of the few things that you get in a boulangerie everywhere around France. And so I decided to rate all of them out of 10. And the criteria were appearance, not so important, but, you know, it's nice to have something nice to look at in the morning. And texture and flavour. But what I like in a croissant is I like it to be very crisp on the ends, almost like it's been fried in butter, and then inside to be really squidgy and delicious. So, you know, maybe not a textbook croissant, but that's my preference. And to have a really buttery flavour, a little bit sweet, a bit savoury, maybe a bit yeasty. So, yeah, I found some good ones.
Is there, do you think, a sort of an agreed universal French standard around the croissant, or is this something which too is sort of is subject to regional variation in taste?
Well, interestingly, I did find that in certain regions, the margarine croissant is still quite popular. So if you go into a French boulangerie, and I didn't realise this, the curved croissants are the ones made of margarine in general, and the straight ones are the butter ones. And they'll usually be labelled, but so the margarine ones are more popular in certain areas, like the East. I found a lot more of those. And also, I think actually it's quite often the particular boulangerie rather than the region. So you'll go in there, and you can actually ask for them to be, you know, more well-cooked or less well-cooked, you know, depending on your taste, just as with a baguette. But what they do more regionally is you'll find with the leftover croissants, they tend to do different things. So in the north and the east, you find a lot more sort of cheesy baked croissants, and then you get a lot more sort of almond syrups and stuff in Paris. So that was quite interesting as well to see what they did with any of the leftovers.
So more broadly, in the cuisine of the regions of France, I mean, describe some of those variations for us.
So I think a really easy way to categorise it is the different fat that they use. So in the West, you get a lot of butter, and also in the Alps, you get duck fat down in the southwest, you get olive oil down in the southeast. And then if you go to places like Alsace and Lorraine, traditionally they would use lard, so pig fat. And so that's quite a handy way to demarcate it. You get the sort of Germanic influence in the east, you get the Alps and all of that mountain stuff going down a little bit to Italy in the southeast. Then you get the sort of really gutsy French cuisine, the sort of duck fat and the foie gras and stuff, southwest. And then in the northwest, it's almost a bit more, and I hesitate to say this because, you know, some French might be listening, but it reminds me a lot more of the cuisine of sort of southwest Britain, a lot of dairy, a lot of apples, a lot of lamb. And so, yeah, it's all so different. And it sort of blows my mind because it is such a big country. It's the biggest country in Western Europe which I hadn't realised before I decided to cycle around it. And so it's as different as, you know, eating in, I'd say, 4 or 5 different countries, the variation. And, you know, if you're in the north, you'll get butter with your bread, and then suddenly you pop out and you're not getting anything, and you get olive oil, everything cooked in olive oil, you get wine instead of cider with it. It's just, it's completely fascinating.
From what you say about that extraordinary variation, I'm wondering what happened to give us that sort of homogenized version of French food, as fine as it is, that we tend to think of in countries outside of France. That's sort of the restaurant version of French cooking.
I think, to be honest, it's Paris cooking, and that's sort of born out of, you know, the classical French tradition. So all of the very rich sauces and things that you still get in slightly old-fashioned French restaurants, and the stuff that is popular in the capital. So, you know, you get a lot of the brasserie classics, which apparently all actually come from the east, so from Alsace-Lorraine. You get a lot of that sort of stuff with chips and, you know, things like that, and quiche Lorraine and et cetera, et cetera. And they're very popular in Paris. So I'm assuming that that's why, and, you know, Parisians took them, and, you know, a little bit like in the UK, a lot of our Indian food is actually Bangladeshi. And also, to be honest, quite a lot of the regional French food is not for the faint-hearted. And, you know, when I was in Lyon, there was an awful lot of offal in there. And I don't know about Australia, but that would not go down quite so well in a French restaurant in the UK, all of those sort of bits of ears and intestines, etc. You know, you have to, maybe you had to be born to that kind of thing.
So I'm guessing that the ears and intestines of Lyon may not have been the favourite dish of the journey. What was?
I did have a really excellent meal in Lyon, and I'm, you know, having spent that, you know, I'm a food writer, so I'm greedy anyway, and having spent that much time in France, I've made my peace with those ears and intestines. But my favourite meal actually was probably on my birthday, simply because it was in, actually my only Michelin-starred restaurant of the trip. But it wasn't so much that. It was I had a really fantastic meal. I had little sort of foie gras meringues. And generally, I'm not a big foie gras fan, but they're on the menu. And I thought, God, foie gras and meringue, that sounds crazy. So I ate it. Absolutely delicious. And then rascasse, a little fish from the south that they make bouillabaisse out of with mango and fennel, which is incredible. And then these Paris breasts, which are an incredible choux pastry rings filled with coffee cream and with sort of a nut praline on top. And they put a sparkler in it because it was my birthday. And that's what made it so amazing. I was having dinner on my birthday on my own. I'd actually had a terrible day in the saddle. I arrived sort of an hour late, crying with wet hair covered in bike oil, to this super swanky sort of Paris Michelin restaurant, thinking they were going to turn me away, quite frankly. They could not have been friendlier. They, you know, the stereotype of the snooty French waiter did not hold true there. They were lovely. They brought me a glass of champagne. At the end, I said to Madame behind the till, I said, oh, thank you so much for being so kind. You know, it's my birthday. I was on my own. So thank you. And she said, she came out from behind her till, which was unthought of, and gave me a hug and said, but you weren't on your own, you were with us. And she gave me a kiss. I started crying, it might have been the champagne. But that sort of really summed up to me that you know, the French are actually incredibly, friendly is probably the wrong word, but incredibly kind people. And they were just, everyone was absolutely lovely.
Felicity, thank you. It sounds a magical experience. And thank you so much for talking us through.
My absolute pleasure.
Felicity Cloke, she's the author of One More Croissant for the Road. You'll find that in shops. This is Blueprint here on RN.